Technorama episode 5.2.9 for April 11, 2018. What happened to our show title? Oh, Player One has left the game.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
This just in, I don't have a media corner. Where can I get one?
Over there, in the media corner.
Too logical.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Hello and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at all that other stuff I just said. I'm just adjusting volumes because they seem to be a little off tonight. Let me bring that down so I'm not shouting over the music. If this is your first time joining Technorama, welcome to the show. Good to see you. Good to have you here. Whether you're watching live on Facebook, as we do, we'll talk about that later, or you are watching or listening later, thank you. My name is Chuck Tomasi, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm letting my geek flag fly tonight. Look, I got, I don't know if you can see this, I got Superman.
Yes.
And then look, Trekkie. Just letting it all gang out.
I have my Spock socks on.
Spock socks.
That Melissa Bartel, the bathtub mermaid, sent me for Christmas.
Oh, nice.
Yes. I appreciate them very much. I wear them to church today, but nobody made a comment. Suppose if I'd been wearing shorts, that would have helped.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a little bit of feedback. Check this out. Yes.
All right.
We have a real live letter. Letters. So we play the official letter music.
Right. Letters every day.
Every day.
Mail,
day.
Mail, mail today.
Priority.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman. Mail today.
I think this came via, I don't know how much it cost to ship from Europe. Probably like about a euro. Because I know mine are about $1.05 to get over to him. This is from Jorga from Austria. And he sends me this lovely picture. Try not to get too much camera shine on there.
Yes.
Here, I can. Actually, if I get it close enough, I can do a Ken Burns effect.
I got one as well. It's actually downstairs.
He was door. At City in the Clouds, apparently.
Bespin. I'm waiting to get a card from Bespin from Jorga.
I named my WebEx room instead of Chuck Tomasi's personal room. It's called Mos Eisley Cantina.
Yes.
We all can.
Every time I pop in it, I want to hear that music. Dun, 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 dun. Actually, I named mine the Fortress of Solitude. Well, you saw that.
But
of
you
course,
get,
it goes
you,
well with my.
You team. Get no solitude on WebEx. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, that's the point. That's actually. Before I had it, the Craig's Peace Palace. And
Pizza Palace?
Oh, peace.
I like a large pepperoni with extra sausage.
Not doing pizza.
Sounds really good right now for some reason. Anywho, we're not here to talk about pizza. We are here to talk about nerd stuff. And one of our favorite things we talk about is the history. Where's my history music? There it is.
Here we go.
On this day in history for April 11, 2018, did you know that April 11th is the 101st day of the year? That's just hard to say.
What?
It's the 101st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 264 days remaining in 2018. I just wanted to say 101st. It was on this day in 1951 that the Stone of Scone, the stone upon which Scottish monarchs were traditionally crowned, is found on the site of the altar of Arbroath Abbey. It had been taken by Scottish nationalist students from its place in Westminster Abbey. If you go back and watch, where did I see that on Netflix? There was a history documentary about this.
Mm-hmm.
It used to sit underneath the throne and then it got stolen because it was originally taken from Scotland. Anyway, go watch. A lot of fun. There's learning be had there.
What movie was that?
Yeah,
well,
I don't remember. I'm trying to remember what show that was.
I'll realize
chat room,
it in
help
a minute.
Us out.
And by the way, that's probably the longest history note I think we've had in here, three lines long. It was also on this date in 1957 that United Kingdom agrees to Singaporean self-rule.
You're on your own.
Yeah, see ya.
No, how would a Brit say it? Jolly good. Cheers.
On with you.
Yeah, the Australians would be saying, good on you. 50 years ago today, President Lyndon B. Johnson signs the Civil Rights Acts of 1968, prohibiting discrimination in the sale, rental, or financing of housing. Good for him.
It was also on this date in 1970 that the Apollo 13 is launched.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It turns into a movie. Also on April 11, 1976, the Apple I is created. Surprisingly, hey. Not too many events. Happy birthday goes out in this date to English surgeon, geologist, and paleontologist James Parkinson, born in this date in 1755.
Macedonio Maloney, the Italian physicist and academic, was born 220 years ago today. Very celebrant.
William Wallace Campbell, American astronomer and academic, was born on that same date in 1862.
An American mathematician, Dorothy Lewis Bernstein, was born on this date in 1914.
Carl Rebain, Estonian physicist and academic, was born on the same date in 1926.
And Ukrainian-Russian physicist and academic, Lou Balat, was born 71 years ago today.
And here I was thinking with a lead-up like Ukrainian-Russian physicist and academic, we were going to get a good name, but Lev Bulat is... the easiest one we've had yet.
Right.
English mathematician and academic Andrew Wiles was born on this date in 1953. You think he's still alive? I don't know. I didn't check. The algorithm didn't say. Listener birthdays. We don't have a date on this first one. Apparently something got knocked off. But since we didn't have a show last week for personal reasons, I appreciate everybody sticking with us. We combined last week's and this week's. We have April 4th is Joel McLaughlin, a.k.a. Gorkin. April 5th, we have four birthdays. Chad Davis, John Isler. Mm-hmm. Somebody snuck in on the same line. That's five birthdays. Chad Davis, John Isler, Griffin Sylvester, Martine Teismans, who, if I'm not mistaken, is Yorga's mother. Hey, I got a postcard from your son. Thanks.
Hope he remembers you.
Ringmaster Greg from Dancing with Elvis. I hope he sent one for you. Yeah. Yorga, send your mom a postcard too. Ringmaster Greg. April 6th is Trevor Litecki, future geek. It is the future since this was written.
Well, April 7th. The future's always tomorrow.
April 7th. Fellow podcaster, friend of the show, PC Herring. Danny Harnish is on the 4th. And, Mrs. Technorama on the 16th.
Oh, look at there.
How about that? Just off backwards. Camera and running all the cameras.
Yeah, she's aging backwards.
You got a smile out of her. Okay. If you want to be on the Technorama birthday calendar, visit our wiki over at chuckchat.com/wiki. Get your name over there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And apparently I forgot to finish out these show notes. Let's see. That's the way it was on this date in history for April 11, 2018. There we are.
I like how we build the show notes as we're working.
Just-in-time manufacturing. That's what it's called. We're manufacturing this show as you see it.
Right.
That takes care. Let's. All right. No, we're not waiting the extra minute and 20 for this. Goodbye!
Wait, I love this part. All right. Out of here.
All right. They're gone.
See you guys.
Till next week.
Yeah.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
That's not so funny anymore.
No, not.
Wait. There's another one that's not so funny anymore. It's this one. I was looking through our... Where is it? Oh, now I don't see it. I got to find it real quick. There. Okay. If this plays.
And we're also working on it. Oh.
WikiLeaks? Sounds like it requires adult undergarments.
Wait. I made a new one today. First time in about 10 years, right? Dongle. Hey, if you could do mouse balls years ago.
I was going to say, that sounds familiar. Wait a minute. I did it in the mouse balls. Dongle.
Dongle. All right.
How many of those things we got now?
Lots. Like a bunch of, it's a lot more than I remember. I thought I would have said we have about 15. I think we have about upwards of 60, maybe 70.
What?
Yes.
It's insane. We can do just a podcast, just let them all play.
Okay. We have to bring some back. I'll bet some of our, even our older listeners don't remember them.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about a lot of them. Like, wow, what was this one? Oh, yeah. Okay, well, apparently we have spelling problems. We spelled source code incorrectly. S-O-R-C-E code. Yeah, all right, we'll find out what that one's all about. We're not just going to make this show retro.
Okay.
I would love to change the world, but they never gave me the source code.
Oh, well, now we know it's spelled wrong. Speaking of source code.
Hey, by the way, I think my favorite one was the plugging a battery back up into...
UPS. What was it? A UPS into another UPS or something.
Yeah.
Speaking of source code, last Thursday, we went to OHSO, which is a little microbrew. There's three of them that I'm aware of in the Phoenix area. Mm-hmm. And they allow you to sign up and take this class on making beer. And they will brew a batch of whatever you want while they're there. I mean, you can pour in the hops and you can stir. I got to stir the grain and it got really thick. And we made like 50 gallons of porter. And we'll be tapping it in about 5-6 weeks. Well, they said, you get to name this. And I went, oh, what's a good geeky name for this? And we were thinking like USB porter, SSH 22 porter. We're trying to think of all these crazy names, and
443
finally came up with source code porter. It was a good layman's name. We were going to try and weave it in, but we may have to wait till other beers come along to start coming up with more ServiceNow related beer.
You should
names.
Have called it scan
porter. we were thinking about like open porter, open source porter,
Arwell.
No, that if it had firewall or anything, it would have had jalapenos in it. So,
Firewall porter. I don't know. There's probably a good one in there.
Yeah. So if you, dear listener, have any ideas for nerdy beer names that we could take advantage of and probably borrow and then give you credit for, we'd love to hear them. Because
you should have put that as our question of the week.
Well, go change it. We haven't asked our question of the week yet.
What's
I guess
a
we
nerdy
just did.
Name for beer?
Give me good beer, nerdy beer names. Hopefully ones that have not been used before, but you can be inspired by other nerdy beer names. I was looking things up and found some, maybe it has to be technology related, hardware or software, but don't go into the comic book genre or games or anything like that. We're trying to keep this related to our jobs, not our.
So what is your suggestion for a nerdy beer or band name?
Your band name.
Yeah, well, I mean,
wow, yeah. you really crossed the streams there.
You know, I told Kim one time, my wife, I told Kim, if we ever had the opportunity to build a house and I named the street, I always wanted to name it like Hard Drive or something like that, you know.
Well, we were thinking about naming our houses.
Naming your houses?
Yeah, like some people name their estate, you know, welcome to, you know, Wayne Manor. Yeah. That's not very original, but you know, some people will name it, you know, Sunset Palace, or
I've seen people do that at the beach. You know,
my parents have done that. I grew up in a house. It was called Harbor Ridge, and it was, it had a view of the lower harbor of Marquette, and it was on Ridge Street. So my dad combined it and made Harbor Ridge, and he had his business, his like the parent company for a lot of the businesses we had was Harbor Ridge Enterprises. When they moved out to a place on Lakewood Lane in Marquette, Michigan, he called it Casa del Lago, which is house by the lake.
Yep.
So I'm thinking we could name our house something like what?
The only reason he was doing that is so it could tie it into the company and write it off. So
sure.
That's why he named it.
Casa, this would be Casa del Sol, but I think... I don't know.
Hey, that, I had a friend in high school, and his family had a beach, a house at the beach in Holden Beach in North Carolina.
Yes.
And, you know, I went with them one time to, they were enclosed the beach down, beach house Allen for the winter, and it was named Holden Beach, Holden On. That's the name of the house. People get creative down at the beach with all those house names.
The yeah, I've seen some really creative ones. Speaking of which, you will be coming out here to Phoenix.
Yes.
In what, about 30 days, a little less?
Yeah, and it's a little scary to think that it's about a month away. Yeah.
So are we doing your, we would probably have to do your what, have a get together after knowledge. What would that be?
Yeah, we're gonna,
the weekend of the 12th.
Yeah, we'll be off we won't do Technorama on the 6th, but
no,
I will
we can't,
be there
we can't,
for the 13th.
We can't do it on the 6th. Yeah, we'll be off on the 6th.
That's what I'm saying. We'll be off on the 6th, and we'll
do Technorama.
I'll be there for the 13th.
Do you want to do okay, we'll do a get together and a show that night. So if you're in the Phoenix area or you want to come by the Phoenix area, if you're not too far away, I mean, certainly don't fly across country, but well, you're welcome.
When's your beer going to be done?
The 13th.
No,
14th. 14th, 13th or 14th.
Oh.
Wait, aren't you flying out on the 13th?
No, I'm flying. No, I'm flying home on Monday.
That's the 13th.
What?
No, 6th, 13th. You're right. You're flying out on the 14th. It's going to be ready on the 14th. I apologize. 5:14.
Just in time.
Well,
yeah, you got to see pictures.
We could tap it.
You know,
it's not too far from the airport. Tap it in the morning. Get your flight.
Actually, I'll fly out in the afternoon.
Hey, well, let's find out what time they open.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
We'll sample it.
I want to drink some source code.
I will, or I can save you some. All right. Okay. It's our only show in May. Oh, my. Because after that, we'll be on a family trip.
Are going out of town.
Yes, we are going out of town. Speaking of out of town.
We'll record 4 episodes in one night.
No, we won't. We're not that imaginative.
Well, yeah, I just thought about it. So, yeah.
It's like what John Bell said. We're not doing any music this year. It's just too hard in the editing.
Yeah, right.
He breaks the fourth wall all the time. I love that show. We're talking about Bells in the Bat Free, if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah. Go back and start from scratch.
Yeah, 2005. Good luck. All right. So. Should we do a news story?
Let's do it.
Good startling news, everyone.
I can't believe it. Maybe one day there will be bee-like robots buzzing around on the surface of Mars. NASA has selected...
What is that bee doing to Mars?
To be or not to be? It's as, the picture is as giant as... I'm sure that's Photoshopped. It has to be. It has to be.
It has. No, the bee is actually on the lens. And they took a picture. It's on the lens of the Hubble.
How would it get on the lens of the Hubble? Hubble's on space.
You ever seen that picture where somebody was backing up and on the rear view camera, there was a spider, but
yes.
On the screen, it looks like it's huge.
Ah!
Yeah.
Like a 1950s sci-fi movie. Yeah. NASA has selected 25 proposals to receive funding as part of its Innovative Concepts NIAC program. Each award amounts to around $125,000.
Hmm.
But as a website that's always been a fan of small ideas, we quite like Marsbee, a swarm of flapping winged flyers for enhanced Mars exploration.
Marsbee.
Quote, with the ability to fly through the ultra-low density atmosphere of Mars, Marsbees would enable researchers to gather previously unattainable data about the pressure, temperature, and chemical composition of Mars. Project lead Quan Kang from the University of Alabama in Huntsville told Gizmodo, they can also aid in collaborative terrain mapping. A Mars rover could serve as the home base for a swarm of these bees. Didn't you watch Black Mirror? They're going to attack everybody who votes for them. According to the NASA release.
No, I did not.
They'd be low power and specifically designed for the red planet's lower density atmosphere. Well, that's kind of cool. I like original ideas. The researchers are a long way from realizing these flyers. They must first determine the optimal wing design and weight. Let me read that again. They must first determine the optimal wing design and weight. but they've already calculated.
I'm waiting.
They should be able to use bug-inspired wings to generate Marsby's lift, Kang told me. I like the originality. I like the idea. I hope they definitely get this project off the ground. Oh, well, I walked myself into that one.
I like the idea of them trying to think out of the box, just like when they sent the first rovers there.
Curiosity rover, how they dropped it from the skyhook.
Yeah. Well, before that, the old one, the original, the name escapes me.
Where they bounced it along?
Yeah, they bounced it in the triangle balloon. And that, I kept thinking, well, that is fantastic, because no matter how it landed, it would automatically open up. And so I think those kind of things, thinking out of the box, using little robots that can fly with little tiny cameras mm-hmm. and sonar or whatever they're going to use to map out stuff. Why not? I mean, you know, something crazy like that's going to be super helpful. I think it's awesome.
I wonder
until the humans get there, then they actually swarm and attack the humans.
If you want an interesting perspective on sending people to Mars, watch
The Martian?
No, Dr. Robert Ballard's show, Alien Deep. He talks about why that money would be better spent here on Earth expanding into the oceans. You could take the same amount of money of sending like 5 people to Mars and benefit thousands, hundreds of thousands of people here on Earth. And, sure. and they get into this sort of off-camera debate with, was it Alan Shepard? It was one of the veteran, Buzz Aldrin. It might have been Buzz Aldrin that he was saying, you know, any sufficiently advanced society needs mm-hmm. to move or die. You know, they need to expand into new territories or they put themselves at risk of, you know, it was an interesting debate, but I'm leaning on the side of Dr. Ballard for this one. If we're going to spend a whole crap ton of money, sending 5 people to Mars is what, tell me what good that's going to do us. We're not going to terraform the place and move half the civilization there and say, okay, we're safe from an asteroid attack.
Actually, you know what? I think I'm kind of with you because we can't really even take care of the planet we're on, much less go some
that
was to another
the
one.
Other argument. It's like, you know, let's spend some time and sense taking care of this one and cut down on the pollution and the greenhouse gases. And yeah, we've got all this money to spend on sending a handful of people to Mars. I'm not dissing the space program. I think, you know, send robots and probes and whatnot. That makes complete sense.
Oh, I would totally be down with seeing have a firsthand experience of somebody on Mars, but I still think, honestly, I think we need to grow as humans, you know, a little bit longer and develop our technology enough sufficiently rather than it being a bunch of guesswork to get there than getting there and doing something worthwhile.
I agree. I think we need to
well, good.
Put our cards on the table and what? You want to take the next story? Well, we're in space.
You agree.
We're in space.
Yeah. Well, speaking of space. All right, they pull it up. So the Hubble Space Telescope spots the furthest known star, 100 times further away than previously recorded. Astronomers have spotted numerous extremely distant galaxies, but spotting individual stars is understandably more difficult unless they go supernova. Sometimes, though, cosmic alignment works in their favor. Researchers using Hubble telescope data have spotted Icarus, a image of 1149+22. Okay.
That went out up to 3-3. I'm doing the math here. 3362.
Yeah. Okay. A blue supergiant whose light was emitted.
Emitted.
When it was 9 million years ago,
admitted.
Yeah. When it was 9 billion years away from Earth, light years away from Earth, excuse me. That's over 100 times farther than previously, the previous record setter. They captured the star thanks to a rare ideal gravitational lensing effect where the star's light was magnified not only by the gravity of an in-between galaxy cluster 5 billion light years away from Earth, but by our star inside that cluster, by a star inside that cluster.
Wow.
All told, the lensing magnified the Icarus about 2,000 times. That's hard to even fathom. But wow. So observers have been keeping close watch on the cluster since 2014 when they detected a supernova that turned out to be present in a galaxy 9 billion miles light years away. They realized Icarus was presented in April 2016, when a point of light near the supernova seemed to change brightness. It says, don't get too attached to this new discovery. With this kind of distance, Icarus was long since turned into a neutron star or a black hole. Yeah, because by the time we saw it, years have gone by.
Billions of years. Yeah.
Yeah. So the findings are still advancing science in many ways that you might not expect. However, as the Guardian noted, Icarus study ruled out a theory that dark matter consisted of black holes. If that had been the case, they would have brightened Icarus even more. If nothing else, this proves that humanity can detect more than just the largest and brightest celestial objects at these kinds of distances, which is, again, it's hard to even imagine those kind of distances.
You know what that second image reminded me of, where they have all the colored arrows and whatnot? It reminds me of one of those things that would come up during PowerPoint karaoke at Dragon Con. And they'd put a marine biologist on somebody else's slides and go, talk through it.
And then stuff
they get to something like this. And like, here we can see the path of worms in the sky.
Yeah. By the way, if you haven't experienced the PowerPoint karaoke, anybody listening, go check it out if you can at Dragon Con, or there's probably video somewhere floating around it. It's like they take somebody, a doctor or somebody with a PhD, and they have to present on a slide that's not in their field.
Yes.
Which is kind of funny.
It's part of the program called Solve for X, and it's one of the most popular. So if you are considering seeing it, sign up early. And I believe that it's also done by a comedy troupe that is in the Atlanta area. So you don't have to be at Dragon Con to see it.
Okay. I'm sure there's videos online about it too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Go check it out.
It's even funnier when you get people in cosplay, like Mayor McCheese talking about stuff. He's trying to talk about a serious topic in a non-serious way, in a non-serious costume, and it's just pure hilarity.
Yeah. Actually, that guy is on the Tested channel with Adam Savage. They does some videos there.
Wearing Mayor McCheese?
No, he's not wearing Mayor McCheese. I just knew, but I knew who he was at Dragon Con because of the videos. I was like, oh, I know the guy. So you can go see him there.
All right. We are going to take a real quick break. We'll be back just in a little bit with a Remember When. You're going to have to remember a long time ago for that one. And a couple of Media Corner stories. And of course, our shout out to our patrons. So hang on. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Yeah.
Bob Nerdly is a real Geico insurance customer, not an actor. To help him with his message, we've hired professional voice actor John Bell.
I was having problems downloading my podcast.
In a world where critical information has to get through.
I went to chuckchat.com and clicked on Technorama and gave it a listen. Tech, science, sci-fi, interviews, it was great.
A new wind was beginning to blow.
Chuck and Craig were funny, informative. I don't know what I would have done without them.
In the fight for justice, two men stood up to help those in need.
Geico Insurance. Only available by listening to Technorama at chuckchat.com.
Feed your inner geek. My throat is starting to hurt.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from MythBusters. And Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
A I can still remember making those editing decisions when I put together the promo. And I go, right after the music, he's got to say that.
That's not how it was recorded either. It was sort of in the middle when he was doing that voice. He went...
yeah.
That was good. I like the way he hung on to that, too. A new wind was beginning to blow. He's like, wow, really hung on to that one.
I think he recorded it a couple different ways, and I was like, oh, we got to use that one.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of this, a little dash of salt, dash of pepper. We're good. All right. We have some news about the dinosaurs that you may or may not have heard before. Let me make this font just a tad bigger so I can see it.
Newsprint or something.
Some experts have long believed that massive asteroid was primary cause of dinosaurs' extinction. Some 65 million years ago, 3 years, 2 days, and 12 hours. But new analysis from the University of Albany psychology professor, because that sounds like an authority on dinosaurs.
Wait, just go with it.
Okay. Suggests that the dinosaurs were in trouble long before the asteroid hit. They had family problems. You know,
he could feel their pain.
Mrs. T-Rex was all up in Mr. T-Rex's grill, and it wasn't good.
Grill.
Professor and evolutionary psychologist Gordon Gallup and his former student Michael J. Frederick. Is Friedrich or Frederick?
Frankenstein.
Now from the University of Baltimore, assert that the emergence of toxic plants combined with dinosaurs' inability to associate the taste of certain foods with danger had already drastically decreased the population when the asteroid hit. Well, that's good. Fewer of them to die off. Learned taste aversion is an evolutionary defense seen in many species, in which the animal learns to associate the consumption of a plant or food with the negative consequences, such as feeling ill. To explain the defense mechanism, Gallup offers an example of rats. A reason why most attempts to eliminate rats have not been successful is because they, like many other species, have evolved to cope with plant toxicity, says Gallup. When rats encounter a new food, they typically sample only a small amount, and if they get sick, they show a remarkable ability to avoid that food again because they associate the taste and the smell of it with a negative reaction, which is why you put peanut butter on the traps, and then when they eat the peanut butter, whack, they don't have time to associate it. The association is
poison.
Done.
Yeah, that's right.
The first flowering plants called angiosperms appear in the fossil record well before the asteroid impact and right before the dinosaurs began to gradually disappear. Gallup and Frederick claim that as plants were evolving and developing toxic defenses, dinosaurs continued eating them despite gastrointestinal distress. Well, that would explain the plant eaters. What about the meat eaters? I suppose with fewer plant eaters, then there's less for the meat eaters to eat, right?
Sure.
I mean, Stegosaur is going to walk around going... tastes good. Dead. Right? Yeah. Then what's going to eat the stegosaur? There's no baby stegosaurs coming along. Bacteria. Although there is uncertainty about exactly when flowering plants develop toxicity and exactly how long it took them to proliferate, Gallup and Frederick note that their appearance coincides with the gradual disappearance of dinosaurs.
But you know what? I'd also think that if the plants gradually develop toxicity,
yes,
you would think that the animals that were eating those plants would also develop
a resistance
against that.
Well, they would get this.
There are animals that can eat certain things that is poisonous. I mean, that's the case.
Would certain ones have developed this learned taste aversion and then thus saving the dinosaur race except for asteroid?
You have no taste for an asteroid, huh?
No, if enough of them died off, then other ones would have come along and said, well, I better not eat a whole lot of that or I could die. So they would do like rats and taste a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think they would learn to do that. Isn't that what they were saying? That certain species have evolved to learn to do this?
Mm-hmm.
But then,
why
wouldn't the dinosaurs have learned to do that? I mean, it really depends on what that window was like. Was it 10 million years? When did the plants develop toxicity? And so there's this overlap, but we don't know how big the overlap was, how rapid it was, how mm-hmm. how flexible the dinosaur species was to this. Were they starting to evolve? That we don't know. We don't have any dinosaur tongues to examine.
Again, and I can't imagine it would kill all of them because...
No, because but it said there, would, that it was they were on the decline. They suspect it was on
right.
How do they know there was a decline in dinosaur population prior to the annihilation?
They quit finding fossils.
Well, that's when the annihilation happened. But yeah, I mean, just finding fewer fossils doesn't necessarily mean
I know.
Anyway, there's more to this story than we're being told, people. But I do want.
I don't know how they determine. I don't know how they do that because I mean, it's one thing to look at the layers of rock and figure out where you found the fossil, how old in carbon data and stuff. But I don't know. I don't know. That's why I'm not a paleontologist.
Yeah. We need one to phone in quick.
Yeah. What's the number?
The number is 707-530-2428. We want to hear from you. I mean, we're not going to be able to play it on this show, but if you are a paleontologist or know somebody who is, or a dinosaur psychologist. Yeah. When did you start having these feelings about your mother? Okay. Let's give our patrons a shout out. I just like this music. Because our patrons are awesome. They sign up and they donate. And they get free content in return. Special content that's only available to them.
Well, I don't know about free, because they're kind of paying for it.
Oh, everybody's paying for this show.
Yeah, one way or another.
Thank you to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapontastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble, not that John Noble, Chris MC,
I saw him the other night.
Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, and Jorga Schrawen. Thank you very much, and thanks for the postcard, Jorga.
Hey,
I don't know if I mentioned
once again, my OCD's kicking in. We got one square open on this table.
We'd love to get you on there. Go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and put that in. I thought it was funny that Dave Slusher he gives out his as a bit.ly address and he couldn't remember the original address anymore. He says, I think it's patreon.com/evilgeniuschronicles. Nope.
I'll get into your bit.ly account and look it up.
Right. I thought that was funny. He couldn't remember. Ours is patreon.com/technoramapodcast. There's also a link on the website over at chuckchat.com/technorama. If you can't remember that, there's all kinds of links over there. We would appreciate it very, very much. It keeps this show going. Because we're headed for another software upgrade sometime in the next 12 months, which could actually bring Craig's video into real time instead of a second or two delayed.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah.
I hate being late.
It's late to the party. All right, yeah. We'll kill the music. Thank you very much for our patrons. We love you. All right, and we will get your content. It actually comes out right before this. We release the Patreon show on Monday, and then this show comes out on Wednesday in podcast form. But you're free to listen whatever you want, whenever you want. We have a media corner? We have two media corners.
Yes, we do.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Before we get into that,
yes.
As I was talking about the patrons and came across Crazy Joe's show, Megapodtastic, which I should probably do that.
Yep.
Remember, it was Megapodzilla, and he got a cease and desist letter from, what was it, Tomy? Or whoever owns the right to Godzilla?
Or the Zilla part, I don't know.
I think that's complete and utter nonsense why they should pick on him.
Yeah, it is.
We're about to... let's reverse these two stories and do the Star Trek one first.
Okay.
So go ahead and talk about that one, because I'm gonna tie this into what I just said.
Okay. So let me pull it up. I'll just read the whole thing. I don't know why I'm just getting ready to summarize it. So this is a video that some kids made, or some kids participated in. I'm sure they didn't make the whole thing. There's a music class. And they did a Star Trek fan film. So Parkview Elementary students in Van Buren.
I went to Parkview Elementary, but it was in Marquette.
In Marquette, yeah, not Van
Buren. And it's not it's not Parkview Elementary anymore. What is that, daycare or something? Well, of course, there was a daycare back then too.
Okay, whatever. And so they're getting a lot of attention for their video, "The Adventures of the USS Parkview," a Star Trek fan film production, is getting William Shatner's attention as well. Emmy Award-winning composer, music director Kevin Croxton said he discovered replicas of the Star Trek set in Harrison. Harrison, Georgia, right?
Arkansas? Wasn't this thing in Arkansas? Van Buren? Arkansas?
Maybe. So, anyway, the owners let the students of the film, or students film a video on their set, and they filmed parts of the video in River Valley. It took 8 months from beginning to end to complete the project in true Star Trek fashion. I'm very proud of what we were able to create. They were able to create a film that feels like the old Star Trek episode from beginning to end, Croxton said. And Croxton is an Emmy award winning composer, may have had the mindset or may have been the mastermind behind the film, but said it was this. I see a typo there. It was his students that made the film great. They all did an amazing job playing their parts, and I'm very proud of them, he said. Fifth grade Parkview Elementary student Ben Peer had this to say about a shout out on Twitter by none other than William Shatner. Having him comment on and actually seeing our video and playing, and I was playing his character, that was cool for me, Peer said. And William Shatner said, "Quite a lot of work went into this. Hashtag impressive." And then, of course, he had a link to
say it like Kirk. Come on.
"Quite a lot of work went into this. Hashtag impressive." There you go.
That's the first thing I thought. I was like, wow, isn't this cute? And then I went, that's a lot of work. The uniforms. At first, I was figuring, where did they get this set? But then they explained that.
Well, there's a few of them floating around we know of. We've seen a couple on film, and then I guess somebody else has one in Arkansas. Is this Arkansas for real?
I thought it said so. Yes, no? We'll have to find out. Here, quick, look up where KFSM is.
Yeah, KFSM. Anyway, if you watch this, it's funny because they have lyrics.
Yes.
To the,
some of the music, the background music. Yeah, when you hear the Star Trek music.
The Klingons.
Dun, 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 dun.
It is Arkansas, by the way.
Where's the Easter Bunny? We must find him now. I'm never going to be able to hear those again the same way.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So go check it out. It's not very long. You'll enjoy it. At first, I was like, oh, I wonder how long this is. Is Paramount going to sue him?
Yeah, good luck suing a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Now, that was a lot of fun.
Don't give me any ideas.
The thing that I got to tie this in is at the end, I'm trying to remember one of the productions of the effects, one of the credits came up and said, done by, was it Bugzilla? Like, hey, how'd they get away with that?
You know, Bugzilla is an open source project.
I know what Bugzilla is in terms of software. It was a credit, something like that. I don't have time to scrub through the video.
On this video?
It. Yeah.
I'm going to go look down.
Yeah. Okay. There is definitely something that ends with Zilla in big font at the end of that thing. And I went, now, come on. They pick on Joe, but yet, I don't know.
You know, I know why they picked on Joe, because he's a podcaster making bukus of money.
Yeah, and they wanted their cut.
Yeah, you know that's what it was.
Well, you know, when you start to get rich and famous, the higher you get on the flagpole, the more your butt sticks out.
What?
That's not mine. I just stole it. Our second story in the Media Corner is about a movie called Away. And this is, there's a little trailer in here if you follow through the show notes. We get this from Engadget. A boy dangling from a tree in a barren desert. A forest filled with standing stones that have circular holes punched through them. Turtle riding cats, which I can clearly see from our cats. Spooky caves. Curious elephants. These are just a few of the shots in the first trailer for Away. The 3D animation is far from perfect, but there's a clear, distinctive style throughout. The most impressive part, though, is revealed in the video's description. An animated feature film by Gintz Zilbalidis, I hope that's close, unlike the latest Pixar movies, Away is being made by just one person. It's a colossal challenge, but one that the, get this, 23-year-old animator has been building for towards 8 years. He's been working on this thing since he was 15 years old. Or he's been, not on this specific feature, but he's been working towards this. Zilbalidis grew up in the Latvian capital of Riga. His parents met in an art school, so it was no surprise that he quickly fell in love with the illustration and filmmaking. As a bright-eyed 15-year-old, he made a two-minute short called Rush with a, quote, pretty old iMac. probably about the same age as the one I'm using here from 2009. And a piece of software called Toon Boom. The hand-drawn tale depicts a boy crossing a busy road and narrowly missing a flurry of cars. As he contemplates his near-death experience, another car honks its horn, causing the youth to twist his head and accidentally walk down a manhole. Don't you fall down manholes? I was attempting to make something funny, Zilbalidis said, but that's not what I'm good at. The budding animator enrolled in JRRMV, an art-centric high school in Riga, where he worked on a short called Aqua in his spare time. The film revolves around a cat that has to overcome its fear of the ocean. Zilbalidis isn't really sure where the idea came from, but he had a cat, his family's first, called Josephine at the time. Coincidence? Oh, I don't think so. This is a very, very long article and goes into his history, shows the actual shorts that he made. Creative stuff. Wow. It's going to be interesting to see what this guy comes out with in the next few years. He's 23 now, and I'm liking the trailer. I'd love to see what else comes of it and any follow-up work. So we're going to have to keep an eye on this guy.
He's got a great aesthetic because, I mean, some of the, you know, it doesn't look...
It's almost that Iron Giant look.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It has like an Iron Giant aesthetic to it a little bit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it also looks like his own thing. So I really like it.
Yeah. And I'll be curious to see. There's no dialogue in this at all. But towards the end, as this kid is hanging from the tree in the parachute, they're cutting to different scenes about the turtle riding cats and the elephants. And he's riding his motorcycle wherever he's going. But they always keep cutting back to him hanging in a tree from a parachute. At first, I thought he was like coasting down from a plane, but that might be leading up to this. They actually show him hanging from the tree in his parachute, and up comes this big thing, almost like an Iron Giant, but more organic.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no dialogue in the trailer, but it'll be interesting to see what is this film all about.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of that, I'm a little upset because I want to go see Isle of Dogs. That's actually the
Isle of Dogs. Three words?
Yeah. It's a Wes Anderson movie.
And oh, okay.
It was about to be released, and we saw posters at our local theater. And then, like, right before they released it, the studio says, we're only going to do a limited release. And they changed their strategy. And it's the nearest place is way up in Charlotte for me. It's like 30 miles away. I'm like, come on. Really? I really wanted to see this.
You expected them to bring it to Rock Hill?
I was expecting that, but now I don't know because they changed their strategy before it came out. So it's a stop motion movie by Wes Anderson. I want to check it out, if not, I'll just buy it online, but I hate to do that. I want to go see it in the theater.
Hard to go to the theater.
Well, I would go, but it's like 30 miles away. And you know what I think is funny is today I saw...
You need to come out here, man. 30 miles away is sort of like the average.
I know. But I was watching Jeff Goldblum do one of those Wired autocomplete interviews.
Yes.
You ever seen those where they rip off the things and see what people are searching about them? So it was Jeff Goldblum, and he said something about I love dogs. And he went, you know, I read the script. I did the movie. There was a character he played in the movie, and he did all that. And it wasn't until the press junket for the movie that he realized, or somebody may have told him, that, you know, if you slow down and say, Isle of Dogs. You know, it sounds like I love dogs. And that was completely intentional.
So does Eye of the Tiger.
Isle of Tiger.
That's what when I was a DJ at the roller rink in college. Kid would come up and go, Mister, will you play I Love the Tiger?
Okay.
We used to have a list of all the misheard lyrics that people would request. I really wish I had taken a picture of that because it was priceless. That was one of my favorites. There was another one, I Am the Tiger. Trying to think of what some of the other ones were. I'll have to get together with Scott Reynolds. He would remember a bunch of them too. Anywho, I think that's it.
You know what? Yes. You could almost do your own podcast of misheard lyrics and just, sounds like somebody, hey, the podcast opens up, you hear somebody turn on the shower, and then you start hearing these terrible lyrics.
Oh, no, that's just badly heard lyrics.
And then at the end of the podcast, you hear the squeaky handle turn a shower off and the shower curtain open. That's the end of the podcast. That'd be cool.
Singing in the shower?
Yeah.
So you think you're a star. So you think you can sing. The Voice? What are we talking about? That would actually be, you know, for one of those singing shows, that would be a funny thing to do is come out in a bathtub with the shower around it, start singing. They never see you. They just hear you.
Oh, like Ralph Macchio dressing up in the shower curtain?
I think the whole tub. Anyway, we asked earlier in the show, what's your suggestion for a nerdy beer name or band name? We want to hear that. Throw it our way. Put it in there. Send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com, or call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428, and we will get back to you. Put it on next week's show. We will have a show next week, will we not? I believe so. No reason not to that I can see. Unless life interferes and something goes sideways, we'll let you know.
That's right.
Until then, thank you very much,
Craig. Facebook page.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome, Chuck.
Thank you. And thank you, Mrs. Technorama. Happy birthday to you coming up.
Yes, happy birthday coming up.
Go over to our website at chuckchat.com/technorama and find all our stuff on how to get a hold of us. Email, phone, Facebook, Amazon links. There's stuff over there. You know, T and I wrote this book that's behind me, Podcasting for Dummies. Still selling pretty well. I'm checking it weekly. It's doing real well. Thank you very much for the people who have purchased that. And let this be an example of what you shouldn't do when you podcast.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Scott Tyler was yelling at you. Wrong theater, Chuck.
What theater?
I think the one you were talking about in Wisconsin.
Theater of the Mind?
Y'all can set it up later.
Okay. We'll have to find it. Till next time, give me a binary 101.
What? 1, huh? 101.